to True Faith podcast with me, Norman Riley, joined in a living room in Lewisham after a magnificent 3-0 victory against Chelsea, a match that I've watched on TV. And probably all this talk of contract renewal with regards Rafa, well, I'll tell you now, I've missed the Man U match, the Arsenal match, and now the Chelsea match. So if you're talking about renewals, for the love of the club, it's probably best I just don't renew my season ticket. And if I don't, then there's every chance that we finish in the top four next season. Not that I'm depressed that I wasn't there. I mean, obviously an incredible performance that we're going to discuss. A couple of bits of admin first. There'll be a more in-depth podcast with you on Wednesday. That'll be a lot more the True Faith squad involved, and I'm sure they'll go into it in more depth than me and John do right now. John's just back from what I can only describe as a 72-hour drinking binge and some dens of iniquity in Lancashire and Yorkshire, but he managed to make it back for the game, and his presence is massively appreciated. Otherwise, you'd just have probably 35 minutes of me talking down the phone to you. So here we're going. What can I say, mate? I mean, the game started off, and obviously Sky had on one channel the Liverpool match on, and on the other the Newcastle match, because they thought there might be a possibility of Chelsea pipping Liverpool for the fourth place. And within about sort of 10 minutes, our dominance was so absolute that initially it looked like Chelsea just could not be bothered at all. They'd already accepted the fate. But you turned around, I think you were that surprised by it. You said to me that, is it a case of Chelsea or on purpose given the space that they were giving to Shelby because he was running things? So bearing in mind you thought that initially, and to be honest with you, that's kind of what I thought, because I thought I've never seen a Conte team we thought initially it was a specific tactic, but I guess by the end of the game, do you think it was that, or do you think it was something else?
I think Chelsea had deliberately gone out to stand off and sit a bit deep in the first 10 minutes, but I think Newcastle played so well, and that first 20 minutes, what was the stat that Sky had got up before the first goal had gone? It was something like 9 chances in the first 27 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Chelsea deliberately set themselves up to sit deep and to stand off and give Shelby the ball and let him dictate sort of 40 yards from goal. But once they got stuck in the rut and Newcastle kept coming forward, they didn't really know what to do. They couldn't break out of that. And that's testament to first half performance, but the performance across the entire game was absolutely outstanding. And I think what was most pleasing was such a strong start after particularly the Watford game. Spurs, I thought the first half was good against Spurs as well, but it was really, really good to just see him kind of come out and really go at him in the first 20 minutes.
Aye, absolutely, we did. It was
kind of almost like an incessant wave after wave. And again, you know, you can look at it and say, well, Chelsea had switched off, but it's as I mentioned, it's not like they had nothing to play for. I just think that we were, the determination was obvious from the first minute, and just a couple of little incidents. We've kind of alluded to Dwight Gayle's lack of confidence in front of goal, and I thought that was quite apparent for the first 20 minutes. He had a great chance in the 20th minute where you mentioned at the time the ball was at a kind of level where if he had taken a swing for it, it might have been a yellow card. But I suppose what I was thinking was, if that was Dwight Gayle from last season, or Dwight Gayle confidence, he probably would have just gone for it anyways, and he didn't, and I thought it's just going to be one of those days for the lad. But obviously it turned out it wasn't. And a minute or two before his goal, what we did see was, so obviously N'Golo Kante is a fantastic player. Two brilliant seasons at one season, yeah, at Leicester, brilliant, Chelsea. And there was an incident, I think, in the 20th minute where Diomi just shrugged him off the ball. It was embarrassing. It was just, he almost just swiped his hand and Kante just fell away. And that, to me, that was the moment before he even scored the first goal that I thought, we're going to win this. And obviously the first goal came, and I suppose what we can do is we can talk through the goal, but what we can do is talk about the bigger picture, which was Matt Ritchie's performance. I mean, for a start, let's start with the goal. Before the goal, Ritchie had been buzzing around, he'd been busy, he'd been putting the ball in the box, and I think the first sort of maybe 15 minutes, we alluded to the fact that with a target man in there.
Yeah, everything was going through Richie first 20 minutes. Chelsea didn't really kind of know what to do with him. And again, I think it was part of their plan to stand off and to give him room. Maybe with a little bit of the intention of allowing him to get the ball into the box. Gale didn't look particularly confident. I'm really pleased he scored. Really pleased he scored. But I think Richie's performances all season, every time I've seen him, I think he's been superb. The graft he puts in, his delivery is almost always
that
on the money.
That stat came up, didn't it? That stat came up. One of the very few benefits of watching something on the hideous monstrosity that is Sky Sports is that they were saying that Richie's created 50 chances this season.
It's incredible, isn't it?
I mean, it's unbelievable. It is, you know, yeah. And you think. You just think, like, I think it, June pre-season, we, amongst us, lads and lasses who do this podcast, we discussed maybe Richie making a step up the Premier League, and he went through that spell during the poor 9-game winning run, the winter lean spell where he didn't look particularly at it. But then you could say that was just the case for the rest of the squad. And as far as I'm concerned, the last 3 months, especially the Man United game where he scored. Yeah. Since then, he's to me, he's proven himself to be a Premier League player. He's in his prime to a certain extent. You know, we're not kidding ourselves that he's the quickest and most skillful winger, but he's just incredibly effective.
Yeah.
You know, the drive's there, the ability, the set piece player's there. You know, he's just a good player to have on the side. And you could see him during the match as well. Again, a benefit of watching it on TV was a couple of times you could see him giving directions, especially to Murphy.
Yeah.
A young lad like Murphy. You know, you got someone like Richie in there, all that experience and that kind of determination. Passing advice on. I think he's an invaluable member of the squad and today he was brilliant. He's been brilliant for the last couple of months, really.
I think one of the things that must appeal to Benitez is the fact that he's got a very, very disciplined winger there. He's got someone that will do as he's told, will put the graft in. He's not going to kind of disappear. Even if Richie has a bad game, he's still contributing. He's still putting in a shift. He's still tracking back. And I think Benitez must love players like that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. Benitez loves a player like that, and as a fan, you have to, because you look at someone like, as I think, so let's say Richie against West Brom. We weren't particularly good against West Brom. We dominated possession. We dominated chances. Richie was on and off. He's passing us off, but he never stopped. And that's the thing. And I think that again, we've mentioned this about the team before. It is a squad of players who don't stop. And you know, we went one up, and. Obviously under Rafa, you know, a lot of times we go a goal up and you think, right, they're gonna start pressing now, we need to contain them. But we scored after 23 minutes and it wouldn't have been, I don't think it would have been an injustice if we'd been 3 or 4 by half time. You think a couple of minutes later, well, just talk me through that Shelby run. I think you were comparing it to Gaza at the time, didn't you? About 2 minutes after the goal?
I did. It was just the drive that he had. Collecting the ball, shimming inside, shot went wide, but it was just that sort of the drive and the impact he had. And I suppose that's not something I necessarily associate with Shelby, that kind of getting the ball and driving at people. He's very much sort of, you know, stand 5 yards further back and dictate play. It's obviously where he's most gifted. But maybe that's just a reflection of how the team were performing and the confidence that everybody had today, that when it dropped, it wasn't in his mind to knock it square, pass it out to somebody. He was like, no, go at somebody. And then try and get a shot away.
Ah, no, you know what, mate? It's a really good point, because that's one of the few occasions that I can kind of remember, I can think of, where Shelby, like you see, he actually skinned players. Mm. You know, like, he skinned players before by doing that kind of, you know, like a ball will come in, he'll control, he'll kind of faint, and it'll take a couple of players out, and then he might put a pass out. But that was actually him, like you see, it was him driving,
drove into the box. That's it.
And he was just, I mean, it was a really good save by the world's tallest goalkeeper.
Tibbles.
who's also got, and you know, don't quote me on this because I don't know if it's a physical accuracy, but he's also got the smallest head for a big man.
The smallest head for a big man in goalkeeper.
Well, he's 7'5", but he's got the head of someone who's only 3'2".
And he's got, and he's unfortunately named after what sounds like a household cat.
Oh, Tybalt. Yeah. Well, Tybalt, you know what? You know what? If I was given the opportunity to choose my name in childhood, I'd probably have gone for something like Thibault, because it's, you know,
it's distinctive, isn't it?
It's distinctive. It just sounds nice. Or would you say Thibault or Thibault?
I'd definitely say Thibault.
Thibault, yeah.
Thibault.
Combine Cyril and Thibault.
Yeah.
Thirl. Because it'd be like Chris Eubanks saying Cyril. Right. We'll move on from that. The next incident, I mean, again, it was just coming thick and fast, you know. 2 minutes after the Shelby shot that Thirl made a really good save with. The Gael effort, and this ties into confidence, doesn't it?
Oh no, definitely.
He scored that goal, and all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, he's making space for himself on the edge of the box.
Yeah. Oh, you could see it, couldn't you? Straight away, the ball came to him. His body shape was different. Gets the ball out from his feet really quickly and gets the shot away. And I haven't seen him do that the last couple of games. He's been sort of
hesitant.
He has been hesitant, and it looks bad. I think because the Premiership, any game in the Premiership is so much quicker than anything in the Championship. Just that half a yard, just that microsecond that it takes to control, get your head up. It's a pure confidence thing, isn't it? It's an absolute confidence thing. It was really good to see him score and then really kind of grow into the game a little bit more. Just a shame he had to go off injured.
It was that incident just before half time. It looked like he was struggling, and I suppose, you know, obviously I'm speculating massively here, but that's what you do as a football fan. You just make things up, don't you? So I'm guessing that he went in at half time clearly carrying an injury. He's managed to convince Rafa that he's all right, because his confidence is up and he wants to get back on the pitch. And then within 30 seconds of him coming back on the pitch, Rafa's obviously taken a look and thought, nah, mate, you're not running properly. So he brought Hosseler on, who, and we'll say this now, Hosseler, sorry everyone, that was the dog. She's had a massive sneezing attack and then nearly taken a year out with a scratch. So I can only apologise for that. But it's more or less a regular feature when a podcast recording this house is me dog scratching her ears. She only scratches them when this podcast's on, so I don't know what that is. It's Pavlov's dog syndrome.
That's an absolute conditioning.
As soon as I start talking to the phone with football, the dog starts scratching her lugs. Hosseler, a little weird on Hosseler. He came on and he didn't put up any trees. Because he won't. He wasn't terrible. He wasn't shit. He wasn't deserving of anyone, you know, putting something on his Twitter feed telling him that he's a load of crap. I tell you what Hosseler coming on did, and this is what we both kind of said to each other, was that we've just finished 10th. We've just beaten last season's champions 3-0 at home. We finished 10th with a squad where Rafa's had to choose between, you know, Dwight Gale and Hosseler up front. No disrespect to Dwight. He's an excellent player. But you know, we know that in the Premier League, you want your top scorer to be getting at least double figures, and Dwight hasn't done that. And he's my first choice striker for a very good reason, because he is, as far as I'm concerned, an excellent player. But when you're looking at other Premier League squads, you know, we finished 10th with Hosseler who was the backup for Dwight Gale. And it's just testament to what an unbelievably good job Benitez has done.
Absolutely. You think about the teams that have gone down and the centre forwards that have gone down with them. We've spoken about Rondon, haven't we? You could even throw Crouch into that.
Rodriguez. Tammy Abraham at Swansea.
Tammy Abraham, there you go. There's a case in point. I think to have finished as high as you have with the centre forwards that you've got is absolutely remarkable. But it's all testament to Benitez. It's his ability to get the very best out of average players like Hosseler, who, for all the grief and abuse that he's got, he does do a job.
Well, he does. I mean, the thing is, he's never going to be banging chances in the freighting centre, but, he's been bought, he was brought in, he did a job, he's probably going to get in pre-season, and as far as I'm concerned, you know what, good luck to you, mate, for the rest of your career.
Absolutely.
We're moving on from that anyways. We were still not even at half-time, yeah. It was so ridiculous, the dominance. I'll just go off at a tangent here slightly. In the 32nd minute of the match, now we're going to get the disadvantages of watching a match that's televised by Sky. The commentator, his name's Bill Leslie, I believe, said the camera panned to Lee Charlie, and he mentioned something about brinkmanship between Rafa and Mike Ashley. Mm. It's not fucking brinkmanship, right? brinkmanship's gonna happen in our like in a world where you've got like two sort of sides vying for something that they both kind of put like a decent argument forward for.
Mm.
Mike Ashley's just been an arsehole. There's no brinkmanship involved, yeah. Mike Ashley is not backing Rafa, and it's stupidity because obviously we know with the backing, what he could do with that club would just be, I mean, and I would say beyond my wildest dreams. It's not because we've been in these positions before. It's just another thing that kind of makes you think that Sky have got a relationship with Mike Ashley that will never like allow them to turn around and say, you know what, Ashley, back this man because he'll do wonderful things for you.
I do think it's interesting that it might just be my interpretation of it, but it does seem like Sky try and be more even-handed against Ashley, clearly in the face of having to deal with someone who's a fucking idiot who doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe on Match of the Day you've got Shearer who is more forthright and it's the BBC and they can maybe afford to be a bit more partisan, a bit more reflective of what the fans are actually thinking. But Sky do seem to be a bit sort of soft when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Again, that'll be a discussion that I do doubt. Not necessarily the Sky Mike Ashley thing, but the kind of Rafa issue and the spending money is going to be debated. At the moment, we're going to bask in the glow of what's been an outstanding performance today, and in general a brilliant season. So back the match, we had what, the 36th minute, I think. Perez, this is something that we've mentioned a few times during the season, is the kind of the Newcastle players, we don't have any players on the side who are willing to be a little bit sly. So Perez, he could have that, as far as I'm concerned, that would have, if he'd have fallen on the 36th minute, that was a clear penalty.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And it's interesting because that's something that this whole squad, and there's a lot to admire about the honesty of it. Mm. Like Perez got hit and he stood his ground. He didn't, you know, he didn't fall down. But I suppose if in that split second he thought, I'm just gonna fall over now and I'll get a penalty. Mm. And he didn't. But that could have been 2-0. I'm saying that could have been 2-0. It could have been a penalty, we could have been 3 or 4-0 by then. We on the stroke of half time, we had a chance, Perez flashed it past the post, but I think, and this is reflecting on his whole 90 minutes, but even at half time we were talking about Lejeune's performance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Just picking up on that penalty point though, because it's easy to sort of gloss over it with the way that the game kind of panned out. But that's a really important decision. A key point in the game. And look at that, Perez could have got a hat trick. If he'd taken the penalty.
Yeah.
I don't know, if I'm Perez, I'm still be a bit pissed off about that, you know. He's done the right thing, because the thing is, he's completely the wrong side of Aspilicueta,
yeah.
And he just pulls him. There's no attempt to play the ball. It's absolutely blatant. The referee sees it. He shouldn't have to go down in a situation where that's just a shit decision.
It is a shit decision. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Winds me up a little bit, that, because the narrative there is potentially if he goes down, oh, that looks a bit soft. Spanish player going down, that's a bit soft. And actually, no, it's not, you know. Right. But he stays on his feet, doesn't get the penalty. All right, finishes 3-0, nobody mentions anything. So, you see, I've gone off on one now.
No, but you're right. I mean, it finishes 1-0, and you think, well, we didn't get that fucking penalty. So,
exactly.
No, it was poor. Again, when we do an end-of-season review, I'm sure the lack of Newcastle United penalties is going to come into the equation, because we seem to get denied them on a regular basis, but... You know what? It's funny, we've won 3-0. I'm going to have historical issues if we make Ashley Sky Sports and not getting penalties. Jesus Christ. Maybe it's because I've got exams this week and I'm in the back of my mind. I'm just angry with the world. But half time comes, as I just mentioned there, Lejeune. Again, yeah. let's talk about Lejeune's performance today. Like, I don't recall one occasion where anything got past him, where he didn't put a block in, where he didn't, there was a couple of occasions he ran out of defence with the ball,
yeah.
And we've said this, no, I'm gonna go off on a little one here about Lejeune. I think we saw this amazing 20 minutes against Spurs, and it was kind of held up in mythical status when Harry Kane basically crushed Lejeune, didn't get any punishment for it because he's the golden child, isn't he? Yeah, he's the English golden child, and obviously one of my and I mentioned this the other night, one of my greatest regrets this season is the lack of retribution dished out to him the other night. But you know what? You know what? I don't condone violence. But if Harry Kane happens to be walking past a smelting factory, for example, and there's an accidental liquid metal spill that covers his leg, I'm not going to be too upset. But I'll move on from that. I'll tell you what. Lejeune, he kind of came back in the side when confidence was a bit low and he didn't do too well. And then he went back out the side again. Then he came back in for the Man U game where we won 1-0. And he's been brilliant since. And his performance today was just magical, wasn't it?
I think it's his positional sense, isn't it? I think that's what really came through today. It's not always easy, is it, when you're watching it on TV and you're looking at centre-half. We were watching him against Spurs the other night, being that low down. And that.
And you mentioned him at Spurs, he's mouthing as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was talking the entire back four through the game. I think it makes a difference having a strong keeper as well. I think that brings confidence to the whole of the back four. But Lejeune looks a lot more vocal. And today, just positionally, it was like he was sort of 2 yards ahead of everybody else. He could see where everything was going. I can't remember having to go to ground.
Put it this way, Lejeune was that, and this is a kind of indirect compliment to Lascelles, really. Lejeune was that good today that I barely noticed Lascelles playing.
Yeah.
And that's not a criticism of Lascelles. It's almost like Lejeune just got his job done that effectively. It was almost like Lascelles was just focusing on his game and he didn't have to worry about anyone else, and that spine. So this is the thing, you know, like, we finished 10th this season and you think, like, it's been an amazing job, which it has. It's been a brilliant job. But I threw out this part to you, right? Lejeune and Lascelles at centre-half, Shelvey and Diome in centre midfield. Mm. Do we need, next season, do we need to replace any of those four, or do we need to just get competition in for them? Because they've been fucking brilliant for 3 months.
They're excellent. Yeah. No, I wouldn't disagree with that.
I kind of... Obviously, you know, if you want to get into the realms of fantasy and you think, like, you know what, we'll go and spend 25 million on a centre midfielder to replace Moore.
Yeah.
Or we'll go and get, like, someone big, experienced and horrible from Stoke, like Shawcross at the back.
Mm.
But let's say Shawcross, for example, right? You're looking at 20 million for someone like Shawcross, right? Right now, there's no way he could displace either Lascelles or Lejeune. Brilliant as having the squad in terms of competition, but he wouldn't displace them. Shelvey and Diome, I'm trying to think of a midfielder that you could possibly get for like 20, 25 million. And again, that to a certain extent, we're veering into the realms of fantasy because I can't envisage Newcastle spending that much on a player as long as Ashley's in charge. That Spain there, like, as far as I'm concerned, if we... Dubravka, Lejeune, Lascelles, Diome, Shelvey, that kind of solid bank in the middle, that's what you need to be looking to build your team around that.
Absolutely, and I think the key thing is not so much the reinforcements. Yeah, you need competition there, but it's keeping hold of those. It's keeping hold of those because it's not going to go unnoticed. If Shelvey does make it into the England side, if he does start catching the eye, someone's going to come in with 30 million, Ashley will take it.
But do you think, who do you think would come in for Shelby though? That's the issue. It would have to be someone like West Ham, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be like a team.
Yeah.
But then you've got to go, all right then. So,
Wolves,
Shelby
would, straight off the bat, Wolves.
Wolves. And now, do you think Nuno Santos, what's he called? Nuno Santos, Espiritu Santos. Jesus. Jesus Deus. Whatever he's called.
Yeah.
I can see what you're saying. If Shelby has a good World Cup, teams will be sniffing around him.
I suppose it's...
But it hangs on Rafa staying, mate. If someone comes in for Shelby and Rafa's not there, then it's a different fucking discussion. But the way I look at the Shelby situation is that he's had a brilliant season, especially since Christmas. He could get in the World Cup. He could have a couple of decent games there, let's say, you know, and then someone comes in for him. I don't think someone like Shelby would even entertain the thought of going to someone like West Ham whilst Rafa's in Newcastle because, you know... We're a better club for him to be at. But again, you know, that's a discussion that we might or might not have to have at some point in the future.
I think your point is right though. It's that span of the team, isn't it?
That back of five is ridiculous.
It's one centre forward away from being as good as anything that is probably outside of the top six.
Getting Kennedy on permanently as well would be good on the left eye. Well, actually, we'll talk about that. So Kennedy couldn't play today, obviously, because of. And being his parent club, Chelsea. Jacob Murphy, you know what? Like, I like the kid. I think, you know, he's only a young'un. He's what, 20, 21. Don't get me wrong, he's he's the same age as Kennedy, but I suppose you're talking in terms of ability. Kennedy's way beyond Murphy. There's no two ways about it. But I guess I'm not prepared to write Murphy off today. He was quiet today, but you know what? He had an impact. The first goal,
definitely.
He put himself in the right place to get that kind of looped shot off towards Courtois. He was all right, wasn't he?
He did really, really well for the first goal. That's a great touch.
The touch was excellent.
And then second half, actually, when he was down the left-hand side, there was a couple of times where he was making space. And I think that's the thing as well. It looked like he was kind of making runs and wasn't always getting the ball. And as a winger, that can be a bit deceptive, can't it? But he's making space for other people. I think the ball's naturally going to end up going to someone like Richie. That's why he makes as many chances as he does.
Right.
But I like Murphy. He's got something about him, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's another one as well. He's young. If Benitez is still there, he's the sort of player Benitez would be licking his lips at, saying, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you stick with me, you know, stick with me, and I'll turn you into Perez."
Aye.
I'll get out. You know, we'll get something out of you.
Interesting, you see that stick with me thing with Benitez. So you look at like Chelsea today, right? I mean, the wealth of talent they've got is fucking ridiculous. You know, I mean, they brought Morata and Pedro off the bench for fuck's sake, right? They're a club with a model that is like, we get a manager in, we get a world-class manager in, we get him for 2 seasons, we win trophies and then we fuck him off.
Yeah.
Now, as a player, right, someone like Morata, for example, taking a chance coming to England, you know, taking a chance in context, he's coming to England, he's making himself a multi-millionaire like 10 times over in 2 seasons if he leaves. But in terms of his development as a player, and it's one of those where you think, like, again, give Benitez the money, give him a couple of players to work with. People like, I mean, and I like, you know, imagine Morata 2 or 3 seasons under someone like Benitez. Imagine like Pedro with a couple of more seasons under Benitez. They'd be completely different players.
Yeah.
And it's just really frustrating to see sometimes like Chelsea bring on that kind of player and you just think like, just give fucking Rafa a couple of those players and the club will literally, I mean, we'll tech off, you know what I mean? Again, I'm going back into the wrong area, so we'll move on to that job. We're going back to the game. So we're setting off sorted. I think Chelsea had their golden spell of about 8 minutes, didn't they? And you had the Giroud chance.
They did.
It
was ridiculous, wasn't it? He always impresses me, Giroud.
His looks are impressive for a start.
He's a very, very beautiful man.
He's a beautiful human being.
There's no arguments about him. Yeah. He's a very, very handsome Frenchman.
Yeah, I hate the fact that I don't look like him sometimes, but we're going on to his chance anyway.
What always impresses me is, for a bloke of his size, the sleight of foot and the ability to improvise, I suppose.
That's exactly what that chance was. And he basically back-heel volleyed it again.
Yeah, it was a great save.
The save by Dubravka
was outstanding. That was definitely Chelsea's kind of golden period. And again, it's probably testament to Lejeune, the fact that Giroud was pretty much anonymous. Always plays well against Newcastle, always gets goals.
8-9 for Arsenal.
He got very little service, and again, that's credit to the way that the team pressed. But even when he's not getting service, unlike Harry Kane, you'd expect Giroud to be going into the defender, putting in the Lejeune. Just didn't.
I know. I know, I'm getting back on Lejeune actually, because he was like the kind of The performance he gave today and some of the performances he's given since the Man United match, like, it's the kind of centre-half that I don't recall seeing at Newcastle. Like, a one who can, like, not only win the ball, but then can, like, lift his head up, look and just put, like a pass out. He can create opportunities, you know what I mean? And he was brilliant. And him and Lascelles are just... they're a fucking excellent centre-half pair.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. So either you had the Giroud chance, you had the little Chelsea, and our Chelsea got a little bit excited for like 8 minutes, and then all of a sudden you had the second goal.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, let's start from the beginning. Diarmier put a ball out to Murphy, didn't he? Like, the Diarmier pass to Murphy was just fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, Diarmier was brilliant again today, wasn't he? I think the... I'm trying to think back to it now.
So Diarmier puts it out the left, Murphy puts it in, it breaks, Shelby then takes a hold of it.
That's it, then Shelby gets the shot away. It's a great reaction from Perez.
Oh, but he does that. See, this is nothing with Perez. Like, you know what, like, I mean, any kind of criticism of Perez, like, I can't see. Right, Okiri, he's not the fucking perfect player, right? He plays in a number 10 role. He's not a world beater, right? But for what he brings to the team as a positive, I don't think any of the criticisms justified. You see what I mean? So, what I suppose what I'm trying to say is that players have their weaknesses, right? But if their strengths are that important to the side, then you don't really need to fucking focus on their weaknesses. What's the point?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's a top scorer. I think he's got, he's ended the season on 9 goals now because of his double today. He's not going to be making any kind of top scorer lists, but he's only really been a regular since Christmas in the side in that position. And his instinct, he's got this kind of thing where he can kind of turn and hit it really quickly. And it was just it was like a centre forward's instinct almost, wasn't it, that?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think he's come on leaps and bounds the last few weeks. Under Benitez, he's exactly the sort of player that Benitez is gonna get the best out of. He's never gonna be a world beater, is he? It's interesting he's finished top scorer though.
No, it is. But I'll tell you what, I'd like with Perrin.
I wouldn't necessarily have that at the start of the season.
Well, no, you wouldn't. Absolutely not. I tell you what, is that Perez, I like him. I just like him full stop. Yeah. Now, if the money's given to Rafa in the summer and he goes and buys, a number 10 who's going to slot straight in the side ahead of him, would I be happy? Of course I would. Would I want to sell Perez? Would I not want to be in the squad? Would I not want to be an option? Not at all. Not at all, because I think he's been at Newcastle since he was a kid.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of affection clearly for the club and he's been fucking brilliant for the last few months. So would I like to see him given really good competition? Aye. Would I like to see a better player coming from him? Wait, you always want better players in positions.
Mm.
But would I like to see him leave the club? Nah, not in the slightest. And I mean, that was it. That was pretty much it. Actually, I'm saying that was it after the second goal. You had the Barkley opportunity about 3 minutes after that. That was a...
Yeah, I'd say to you at the time, that was a very important moment, wasn't it? Because Chelsea had still not really done anything. They'd been kept at arm's length and that was the chance. Sort of 2-0 and being completely in the ascendancy. If Barkley scores there, that maybe puts a different context on the... on the last sort of 35 minutes, and I think it was a really good save as well.
Oh, I mean, what he did was like the thing is like
a
the
really good save.
Yeah, what he's done is, I think what Dubravka's done there is, and then what I think makes him a brilliant keeper is that you've got like Barkley in that position, unless he's got the confidence to like basically lash it hard upwards and risk sky not putting it wide. He's always going to kind of have to hit it like on the floor, and Dubravka's got like the kind of the speed of thought to think, well, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he's just spread himself, made himself massive.
And he waited as well. He didn't go to ground straight away. He waited. And then when he went big. No, it was a really important save at a critical point of the game.
I'll mention Barkley again. We'll get on to, we've mentioned players before who Rafa would improve. We were being linked with Ross Barkley in pre-season because he wasn't fancied by Koeman, apparently. And again, it's one of those where Chelsea come in, buy him. He's never going to be a regular at Chelsea. Never. Mm. It's not going to happen. You know, he's gonna fade in and out the side, and he's going to probably end up, getting transferred to a mid-table Premier League side. And again, he's one of those players that you think, you're a young lad. Imagine if we had the chance of signing him. He's clearly got the fucking potential to be a good player. And he's another player that Benitez could probably turn run, but... Again, I've had a few drinks and I'm just starting to play a bit Championship Manager. Yeah, I'm giving Rafa like 100 million. That's what I'm doing right now. So we had the Dubravka save, and then obviously a couple of minutes later, we had the killer goal, the absolute killer goal. And my favourite part of that goal, obviously other than the ball hit the back of the net, was Lascelles.
Yeah.
He threw them completely, didn't he?
Yeah, that was excellent, standing 15 yards offside.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Absolutely no right to be there. He didn't move at all. The ball went over his head, came back, and he still didn't move. He just let the whole of the play move around him.
And obviously, we've mentioned him a million times already, but Lejeune's ball across the box from him.
Yeah, no, excellent. Again, and Perez, real sort of striker's instinct. It's a proper sort of striker's goal to be in there. He read it. He was one step ahead of where the ball was going to be from the second from the knockdown. So that was another very, very good goal.
And I mean, after that it was flat as piss, because we absolutely annihilated them. That was it. They were done. They were completely done. And I think one of the best kind of part of the match for me was this whole debate about Shelby possibly going to the World Cup. Jamie Redknapp, who was a former professional footballer and also the son of Harry Redknapp, I don't know if you've heard of him before, he was on television afterwards, and he was asked a question by Kelly Cates, who's a brilliant host, by the way.
Yeah.
But you said, like, would you take Shelby to the World Cup? That's how I said, would you take Shelby? And Redknapp threw a bat and he went, oh, well, I suppose he's in direct competition with Ruben Loftus-Cheek, right? And straight around, I'm thinking, Loftus-Cheek, I've heard of him like fucking twice this season. He didn't get his rank, he's a decent player. And then Redknapp kind of managed to stretch out a 3-minute conversation based on the pros and cons of Loftus-Cheek and Shelby. Then at the end, eventually, he did see common sense. And he said Shelby, but you know what? We'll forgive him for the delay because he's got to fill in more minutes and he's also Harry Redknapp's son, so there's going to be a little bit of bullshit there, isn't there?
Exactly.
But I think do you remember the Shelby ball across the Hayden?
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting that Hayden had come on and was right wing by that point, wasn't he?
Aye, he was.
But I don't know, it's... The thing with Shelby is it's probably easier to play a pass like that, 70-yard crossfield pass right into space, looks absolutely magnificent, 3-0 up the last day of the season with nothing to play for and the sun shining. But he'd do it at 3-0 down in the middle of December because that's just the player that he is. He sees space and he plays on instinct. He's a natural passer. So rare in this country that we have midfielders that are disciplined enough to do that. They're disciplined enough to not just sort of chase after the ball and go everywhere and quick. He does take his time. He is different.
He is fucking different. There is no... And like, you know what? Again, like, you know, I mean, tell us if I'm wrong here, but I can't think of a single English centre midfielder now who has got the range of passing and the ability to just open up a fucking defence like Shelby. And he was interviewed after the match and he was asked, do you want to go to Russia? And he's like, well, of course, but it's up to Gareth Southgate. Like... If Southgate doesn't take him, I mean, you know, I already think he's an idiot. Because, you know, I just think a lot of human beings are, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But it's a knee-brainer. And you know what? If he doesn't get the World Cup, great, he gets a full sum at Newcastle. He comes back laying our final cylinders next season. But for him, on a personal level, he wants it. And I'd love to see him do it. And I kind of think of any reason why he wouldn't, but... Again, probably a conversation that'll be had, I'm sure, over the summer. I'll just throw a quick little shout out to the podcasts that are going to be available. If you're not a patron already and you're listening to this free podcast, then please, you know, have a little think about becoming a patron. It's £5 a month, so you know, not even £1.25 a week. You get an extra during the season, 3 to 4 shows. During the summer, when there's no domestic football, you'll get an extra 2 shows. We've got the World Cup. There's going to be loads of stuff on. Obviously, you know, I'm working with True Faith. I'm part of it, so I'm going to be very biased. But if I was you, I would subscribe. There you go. I suppose at that, mate, we can give me your man the match and tell us why.
I would probably go with Lejeune. I think he was he was imperious. And if you can keep Giroud as quiet as that, for 90 minutes, then that's good enough for me.
I'll second it, mate.
They were all brilliant.
Well, brilliant.
You struggle to pick out anybody.
You're talking kind of like nine, like the sort of 4 or 5 best performers, 10 out of 10. But what you do is you go, all right, let's say 9.9 out of 10, and maybe there's a point one of a difference between them. And for me, just Lejeune was just fucking. He was just magnificent. Yeah. So I mean, this is the end of the season.
Yeah.
What a season it's been. We've cemented our place in tenth in the Premier League, 44 points, and you know what, Southampton I think finished 8th last season with 46. It's an incredible achievement. There's no other way of looking at it apart from the fact it's an incredible achievement. A -8 goal difference as well, which is utterly superb. The record since Christmas has been fucking spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else to say other than what a brilliant day. And you know what, Mike Ashley just has to back this man because he's the best thing to happen to this club in. Well, definitely Mike Ashley's tenure. And you know, he could be the manager who takes it to a trophy because he's that good. And what a season. And hopefully, if I haven't been, you know, let go on a free transfer in the summer because my contract's up for renewal, I'll be back with you next season. Cheers.